The year that this week's album was released was this year. That's right, folks. We hear Two Dudes and Tunes called an audible, forsaking the wisdom of the Oracle for the soft rock siren song of John Mayer's latest offering, Slob Rock. What we will try to determine over the next hour is this. Did Slob Rock make us weep for joy or cry bitter tears of disappointment? If you're interested in the answer to that question, untie the varsity sweater from around your neck, kick off your boat shoes, and pull up a deck chair as we discuss John Mayer's send-up of Yacht Rock. Today on Two Dudes and Tunes. Listening to Two Dudes and Tunes, the show that might have a new co-host depending on whether or not I can climb back on the pod horse. But hopefully it's more like a pod bicycle that I haven't forgotten how to ride. I'm your erstwhile host, Chris Robinson, and the long-suffering gent across the internet from me is Wood Johnson. Wood, let's say that I don't work out and Tiffany decides not to take over for fear of overshadowing you as a host. Who is your fantasy podcast host?
Man, Chris, that's a tough question. When I read this in your show notes this morning, I was like, how do you replace Chris? Let's be honest.
Oh, that's so sweet of you.
I already play a lot of fantasy football, and I'm a very poor D&D player, so having a fantasy co-host kind of seems like a cheap shot, if you will. But I don't know. If I had the opportunity to record a podcast with anybody, I really think it would be Dan Carlin, the guy who does Hardcore History and Common Sense. I really like his podcasting style, and he's done a couple of shows in the past where he's interviewed people, and he just seems like the kind of guy I'd really like to have a conversation and explore different ideas with. How about you? What kind of a co-host would you have?
Oh man. So, well, before I answer that question, I have to mention that when I read this originally in the show notes, I read George Carlin. It's
like, oh, he would be a pretty good talk to as well.
He would be, but two vastly different experiences. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that Wood liked George Carlin that much.
I drove to Tulsa this week and we listened to a couple of George Carlin stand-up routines in the drive, man, back funny. And forth.
Man, for fantasy podcast host, I'm not sure. I've listened to Conan O'Brien's podcast. And there's no way I could keep up with him as far as like comedy chops go. But man, that guy makes me laugh every time. So I don't know if it would just be a matter of me being like a comedic punching bag. I think I could
play
probably
the straight
put up
guy.
With that.
Play the straight
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, that's who I would pick, I think. And he seems to have a pretty good grasp of music. He plays guitar and he loves music, so. Very I think cool. It'd make for an interesting podcast, at least.
Very cool. Well, what's new with you, man? It's been a couple of weeks since you and I have talked, though the pod world may not know it.
So, as listeners may or may not know, may or may not remember, Megan and I went camping, and that was a lot of fun. The only problem with camping in New Mexico is you have to drive to New Mexico, and that is... it's the pits. It's so boring. Like up until we got into the mountains, Megan and I both were like, this is the longest 6-hour drive that we have ever been on. Like, I think the only drive that was more boring was was our honeymoon was in Cloudcroft, and we drove from Cloudcroft, New Mexico back to McPherson, Kansas, where we were both in school at the time. And, oh man, we drove through like the most boring stretch of Route 66, which was basically just like some yucca and, you know, 55 mile an hour speed limits. So, but once we got there, it was fun. The weather was great. It was so much like cooler and more temperate than down here in the hot, arid desert of Lubbock. And the other thing that I was looking forward to that wound up being a lot of fun was like campfire food. Like we brought a cast iron skillet and did like breakfast burritos in the morning. I made campfire coffee, which it's never as good in a percolator, but it's just the act of like, oh, look at this coffee that I made from the grounds and boiled water. So it was good. And then the other thing that happened during my 2 week absence now was some paying music gigs, which were a lot of fun. So it was for like a home builders event. You know, you go out to like a big fancy development and they have, you know, like an ice cream, like a food truck and stuff like that. But the first night we were in we were playing on the porch of a house that was facing the setting sun. And so we just like absolutely roasted out there. It was so bad. And it's kind of funny, like, you know, when you're playing guitar, your fret hand is kind of like your arm is protected. It's not in direct sunlight, but my right hand that I do all my strumming with was just like
crispy.
Well done, shall we say. But then the second night, so we played one gig Tuesday and one gig Thursday. And Thursday was in kind of a better location, I felt. For one thing, we weren't facing the setting sun. So we weren't just out there being just like blasted by summer heat. So it was good. And to top that all off, I got paid. So that was kind of the highlight of all of it, was getting the paycheck a day later.
It's like, yay.
Yes, I went to school for this. It was finally paying off.
Nice.
Thousands of dollars in student loans later. But win is a win, so I'm not going to be too negative about that.
Cool, man. Well, I'm glad to hear you had a great time. And I know you and I really didn't stay in touch over the past couple of weeks. It's been crazy on both of our fronts, just with all the different things going on. And I had plans to go to El Paso this week for work, and then Friday at about 4 p.m. those plans changed and it became Tulsa. And I got home from Tulsa last night about 7 o'clock. So the past few days have been just kind of a whirlwind of let's go spend 10 hours in a car on other boring drives and from, just to have a couple of painful conversations with a couple of different people and find out where we're not succeeding. And then so it's just been kind of a downer of a week, and I'm really excited to finally get back to this with you and get to hang out a little bit. Though I will say, having Tiffany do the podcast for our last episode was a lot of fun. So I would be remiss not to tell my wife that I thought she did a good job.
I really enjoyed y'all's episode. My only complaint was that, like, I just wanted it to go on because y'all have good chemistry because you're husband and wife. So it was fun to listen. And just a peek behind the pod kimono, listeners, usually Wood will put together a rough edit and then I'll sit and listen to it and try and come up with any like additional cuts I think we need to make. For their episode, no notes, nothing. What you hear is going to be pure, unfiltered Wood and Tiffany Johnson dialogue. So,
oh, it's very filtered. I cut out about an hour worth of content.
Oh, see, you got some bonus episodes for if we ever get a Patreon together. We can hear all the extras.
Actually, it's lots of me just giggling uncontrollably at her jokes. So it's like, we can't use that because I was being stupid.
Oh, man, that's fun. That's good.
But hey, I think it's time for us to turn our attention to the task at hand, which is John Mayer's Sob Rock.
Let's do it. Hey, before we do that, so since this is a music podcast, I have to bring this up. You went from having to go to out in the West Texas town of El Paso
to living on Tulsa time.
Yeah. that occurred to me and I couldn't shoehorn it in. So here it is, just wedged in here in a spot where it doesn't belong, for the sake of a joke that's not that funny. So it was a long walk, little reward, as my dad likes to say.
Perfect.
Speaking of sobbing, let's move on to Sob Rock.
All right, Chris. So this is John Mayer's 2021 album release. He hasn't released anything in about 5 years. Why don't you take a second and tell us why this album is being featured on the show?
So I think both of us really enjoy the rhythm that we are in with this show. I don't think we turned to this album out of anything other than a love for John Mayer's music. We talked about Continuum on the podcast. I don't even know how many episodes ago it's been. We have enough episodes now that I can't remember the numbers. I was doing good for like 10, and now we've gone farther, and I just don't remember.
It was episode 16.
Hey, there we go. So the man about with the spreadsheet.
About 15 episodes ago.
Yeah. But I heard about this album. I had heard some of the singles. And so I suggested to you, hey, why don't we do like what we did with the Foo Fighters and check out this new album? And I think the results were about the same. I was listening to the other episode where I said tip my hand. I think both of us were a little disappointed.
I think it's the Oracle telling us that we shouldn't stray from the formula because it's just setting me up for depression.
She's giving us cookies where she forgot to put in the sugar or used baker's chocolate instead of actual chocolate chips.
Or going full Seinfeld and yelling, no soup for you.
No soup for you!
That's kind of what it feels like, honestly. but, I mean, just to get into it, I was very relieved that I was not the only person who felt like this was super hit or miss.
That's my show note. You can't read that.
But it's true for both of us. Here, we can cut this and you can say it if you want. I'm messing
with you, man. It was a relief for me. When I read your show notes this afternoon, I was like, oh my goodness, I don't have to be the bad guy on this episode. I'm not the black cat here.
Oh man. No, so I was telling Megan this morning. I liked exactly 50% of this album, which, you know, like if you are a batter on a professional baseball team, that's great. Like nobody has ever batted 50%. But if you're talking about like how much of the time I spent listening to this, did I like it? 50% is really, I mean, it's like in school, that's an F. Is 50% still an F? Last time I checked, that was an F.
It's definitely an F, yes.
Let's get into this a little bit. Let's talk about the background of this a little bit. So John Mayer said in a few different interviews, he set out to make this album as though somebody like made an album in the 80s and then just didn't release it.
Mm-hmm.
He also said it was going to be like a post of an album, which, man, like I think bad memes are pretty funny.
First off, this, hold up for 1 second.
Yeah.
The fact that a guy can be so stunningly successful at life that at some point in his career, 8 studio albums deep, he can release an album that he knows is bad and just say, it's what it is. And everybody will be like, okay.
I think that would be more impressive if it was good and people didn't get it.
No. It's bad and he knows it's bad.
Yeah. I mean,
any album, let's put it this way. If it weren't John Mayer, if you said this was a 50% album in general, you would be talking so much trash about that album, you wouldn't walk it back either.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's nothing to walk back. It's frustrating because I think what he had in his head was like, oh, this is going to be so cheesy and goofy. It will be funny and endearing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It came off as really boring. So like the 80s thing, let's address that. 'Cause I think that's super pertinent. You know, this album, if you look at the album artwork and the promos for it, it looks like an old, trying to think of a good artist, like a, who's the guy from Office Space whose name he shares with like a famous singer.
Michael Bolton.
There was nothing wrong with it until I was about 12 years old and that no talent clown became famous and started winning Grammys.
Yeah, it's like, it looks like a cast off Michael Bolton album. Mm-hmm. So he's got the aesthetic right, but I can't really decide if he succeeded or failed musically, because like there are some of these songs that I was listening to that I thoroughly enjoyed the like head nods to other artists. Like just for some examples, the opener Last Train Home really reminded me of like Peter Gabriel or even Phil Collins. Mm-hmm. Wild Blue reminded me of Mark Knopfler or like Eric Clapton's like easy listening adult alternative phase.
And from Wild Blue, I got a lot of just mid-career Eagles.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Just kind of the like bland, inoffensive, but like good. Like that was a track I enjoyed. Shot in the Dark reminded me a little bit of that Bruce Hornsby and the Range. Mm-hmm. Tune The Way It Is. That's just the way it is. Maybe yep. We can throw in a drop instead of me singing it. But and then the right till the right one comes was like a little bit of like Bruce Springsteen kind of vibes. I could even kind of imagine Brandon Flowers from The Killers singing it. So there's stuff that works, but man, the rest of it that didn't work was just it was clunkery.
I'm on record as saying Bruce Springsteen stinks, and I stand by that. But that song, Till the Right One Comes, is like Bruce Springsteen if Bruce Springsteen was turned down to six.
If he had to like dial back the arms, like armpit he was, like, sweat and the
like he's gonna play yelling. At a nursing home, and so he needs to dial way back, you know.
I love it. I love the image of Bruce Springsteen playing at a nursery home. But I kind of wonder. I kind of wonder if it's an age thing. Like, I don't want to just lay all this at the feet of somebody who is like older and more experienced than me. But like, I was doing the math, and John Mayer was born in 77, which means he spent ages 3 to 12 in the 80s. And I kind of feel like the music that you are really well acquainted with is usually the music you hear when you're like 13 and older. Mm-hmm. Right, so like preteen onwards.
I mean, I don't know that that's the case though, because I think in my experience, I was exposed to a lot of 70s and 80s music because I listened to the music my dad listened to.
Yeah,
even in high school, that was kind of just the thing. And so I don't know that you have to live through an era to be really in tune with that era or have it as a part of your musical lexicon. And if anybody could be an exception to to any sort of rules, it would be John Mayer. I mean, musically,
yeah,
his prior albums, we've seen that.
And I thought of that too when I was writing this out, but something about it just seemed, it kind of felt like what I would imagine somebody who like binged a bunch of 80s albums and like coughed up something like that, but didn't have the like, I don't know. It just felt off to me. It felt like, so if you've seen the movie Eyes Wide Shut, I don't know if you've mm-hmm. seen that movie mm-hmm. or not. It's a bizarre Kubrick mm-hmm. erotic thriller with Tom Cruise and what's her face? Another name I can't remember. Nicole Kidman. There we go. But he filmed that movie in England because he didn't want to go back to the States. He lived in England with his family. So they built a mock-up set of New York City. Mm-hmm. But if you look at it, it's
not right.
It's not right. It's like easy cheese. Mm-hmm. And so I just, the tracks that didn't work for me felt like somebody had stood in an elevator in a corporate building for half an hour and gone, okay, I'm going to write an album. But
it's funny.
Also, it's John Mayer, like you said. So I don't know.
It's funny that you mentioned the stand in an elevator and listen for an hour and then write an album. I thought when I was listening to this album that it sounded like John Mayer was a huge fan of John Hughes movies from the 80s. And he was making an album based on the soundtracks to John Hughes movies, not the movies themselves. Just the music. Yeah,
that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, he was like, okay.
Give me a little bit of Breakfast Club over here, a little bit of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah. But the thing, I don't know. See, I keep saying this stuff, but like the personnel on this album, he got people who were there. Mm-hmm. Who played that music. So Greg Philogaines, keyboard player, he was the band leader for some of Michael Jackson's stuff. He played with Stevie Wonder, Eric Clapton, Toto. So that's one guy who's like steeped in that music in that era. Lenny Castro, a percussionist and a drummer who played with Stevie Wonder, Kenny Loggins, Randy Newman, Pat Benatar. And then Pino Palladino played bass, and he's played with Elton John. We've mentioned him on a podcast before on the Continuum album. He's played with Elton John. He was on Don Henley's album, The End of Innocence.
Yep.
So, like, I don't know. I was a little bit baffled that half the album stunk.
Yeah.
And half of it, I don't know. What do you think?
One of the things I also wondered about, and I did a little bit of research to figure this out, and I'm kind of left out in the dark, so I didn't really figure anything out. That's the wrong way of saying I couldn't find what I was looking for. I think one of the core issues here is this sounds like an 80s album that is trying to imitate the 80s. Like, it's got like the 80s style production sounds, but it's using all modern equipment, and it doesn't have the life that like 80s analog or early 80s digital technology would have had, the distinct kind of life that that equipment would have brought to this world. So you end up with something that it just kind of sounds, in general as a whole, the whole soundscape just sounds sterile. It's got kind of some of that funk and groove going, but it doesn't just live.
Sterile is a perfect word for it. And I wish that probably would have helped me like cope with it a little better listening to it. Cause I was just like, what is wrong with this? I can't figure it out.
I'm calling it now. The title is John Mayer is Sterile.
No. John, see a doctor. But that's a good word for it. Because like, as I was listening to it, the whole thing felt off, but the individual elements felt right sonically. Mm-hmm. Like all of the keyboard sounds on this album, the grooves, even his like oohs and ahs in the background. Another thing I didn't put in the show notes that was just kind of a musical qualm I had was yacht rock to me specifies like a different genre than he actually achieved. So he played a lot of, he created a lot of songs that sounded like 80s pop tunes, but yacht rock I feel like always has a lot of jazz influences. Man, I should have made notes for this because I'm grasping at straws here, but the guys who did Hungry Eyes and Man Eater, Hall & Oates. So Hall & Oates, there are a lot of jazz chord changes in their music. Steely Dan is another band that people think of as yacht rock. Christopher Cross, if you've listened to any of his stuff, there's kind of some musical complexity there that I don't think was there on Saab Rock. So I don't know if maybe that kind of rubbed me the wrong way because I was expecting like jazzy Continuum era John Mayer.
Exactly. It should have been a natural fit for him. Yeah.
Well, and part of the thing too, and I was thinking about this listening to it this week, I think I view a lot of albums through the lens of like, oh, too bad this isn't Continuum. Because he's done a lot of different things. And this is just my opinion. I don't know how you feel about it. But ever since Battle Studies, I was like, oh, man, but it's not, you know, give me another Gravity or, you know,
that really kind of get thing. Back to what makes you great.
Yeah, Yeah. And it, like, he's had some really great stuff. Born and Raised is a really excellent album. It's very folksy, kind of 70s West Coast songwriters. But I don't know. I may have just had too many expectations. And I kind of wonder if for artists like the Foo Fighters and John Mayer, you know, you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because people like me are still riding high on the like earlier albums. And so it's really hard sometimes to like shift your expectations a little bit and go like, okay, well, this is going to be something different. Not every album is going to be the hit that I want it to be.
Well, and that's how you end up with bands like AC/DC who will openly tell you that, yeah, we've released the same album 23 times. Like,
yeah,
we know what works. We're not going to challenge you any.
So. Yeah. Another thing I wanted to bring up that I know you had some thoughts on also, the whole thing sounds good, but it sounds off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And what I wanted to bring up was John Mayer's guitar playing, because as I'm sure everybody who listens to the show knows, we like went gaga over his playing on Continuum because he's a really great guitar player. But his guitar playing felt really like out of touch on this album. Last Train Home, Why You No Love Me, and All I Want to Be Is With, All I Want Is to Be With You. That is such a long song title.
Yeah.
By the way, suit terrible, terrible. But
I got some thoughts about that here in a minute. But go ahead and finish your thought first.
Yeah. So my thought basically just boils down to this: is that his playing sounds out of step with 80s like radio pop hits. Like, it's very, very rooted in the blues guitar of the 60s and 70s. And, you know, there's some tracks you could probably point to, like that tune Power of Love. That has like a very Stevie Ray Vaughan-esque guitar solo.
Yep.
It just didn't fit. And like in Why You Know Love Me, and that song reminded me a lot of like George Harrison's stuff, if you've ever heard any of that. And so the front half of the solo is like all these like really fast blues licks. And then all of a sudden he just like puts the brakes on that and launches into like a very good impression of a George Harrison guitar part. And so it just felt like his guitar playing sensibilities were at odds with the 80s genre as well. What did you think about that?
This is going to sound a little bit like an early review, or maybe it is a preview of my review, because I was kind of thinking the same through line throughout this whole thing. And that is, when I think of John Mayer, I think of a guitar player. He's got a great voice. He's a great composer. He's good at writing, but he is a phenomenal guitar player, and probably probably one of the best living guitarists around.
Oh, I mean, yeah,
just easily. Hands down. When I listened to this album, I was expecting to hear an 80s guitar album.
Yeah. So,
and Yacht Rock has a lot of guitar forward music.
It does.
The songs suck on this album are not guitar forward at all. I mean, they're doing other things entirely. And then even the songs that are guitar forward, I felt like the way it was mixed did not make the guitar or John Mayer's playing the star of the show. So the genre became the star, not the performance of that genre. And that's what really, every track, there's good guitar solos, there's great guitar playing, but the guitar is always an accompaniment to the 80s, not the 80s accompanying the performance. And I think that's really what's wrong with this album at the end of the day is not only did I expect it to be a guitar album, a guitar forward album, like Power of Love is great. That is a phenomenally guitar forward 80s tune. There's nothing like that here. There's nothing, you know, this is literally just a bunch of 80s synth sounds. And every now and then you hear a guitar come through it. And that really disappointed me. And the songs that really stink, like, there's not even that little glimmer of hope running through them.
Yeah, yeah. The stuff that you at least lean back on with John Mayer tunes that you don't particularly like is like, oh, okay, well, at least the guitar playing is going to be good. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably, well, I mean,
and that's not even a fair, that's not even a fair assessment though. The guitar playing is great on this album. It's just not the featured act of the album. And it's not, you know, everything else should support John Mayer being John Mayer.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, it feels like it's subduing John Mayer to fit him in that box.
It doesn't play to his strengths.
Yeah.
And I think you and I are coming at different directions of the same problem, because as I listened to this album, part of the reason it didn't feel very 80s to me, which is something I was excited for and wanted to hear, part of the reason it didn't feel very 80s to me was because John Mayer's playing is really good, but it's something else. Mm-hmm. You listen to somebody like Larry Carlton or... the gentleman who plays guitar for Toto, whose name escapes me. But both of those guys were session aces in the 80s, just top flight dudes who were virtuosos who could kind of step into any sort of style. But whenever they had to bring like their own personal style to the forefront, you know, if they weren't playing rhythm parts, if they were going to play leads, they both had jazz chops. Mm-hmm. And they both had a very different style of playing. John Mayer is real into the like Jimi Hendrix, Albert King, Stevie Ray Vaughan stuff.
Yeah.
And it just didn't jive. Like I almost wish he just hadn't done it at all, because I think his songwriting was good. Like on the tracks that worked, his songwriting was a strength on the album. His songwriting, he could more easily adapt to like the 80s synth pop, whatever you want to call it, but his guitar playing just didn't fit at all. So either I would have liked more of it and had it not be an 80s album, or had it be a more yacht rock centric album all the way and had him not do some of those things entirely. So I think you and I have like kind of the same opinion, but for different reasons, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And to talk a little bit about the songwriting of it as a whole, I just pulled up the Wikipedia article because that's scholarly and accepted by everybody at this point in time.
Heck yeah.
It says that this album took him almost 5.5 years to write and record, and that he recorded recorded the first song, which was New Light, as a part of his last album, and it got cut. And so that became the seed that turned into this album. And he'd record a song here or there as he was ready to do it over the course of, well, this album was supposed to come out in March of 2021. And he wrote, I believe it was Wild Blue in late February and pushed release back to July in order to get that mastered and finished. So to think of, you know, even though it took him so long to write these songs, that there was a lot of time to marinate on it and think through what this album was going to be, even if it was just a post, as he points it out. It wasn't something he threw together in a weekend because he got high with a bunch of friends and they decided to make an 80s album in their garage.
Well, and the thing, so I wonder about this 5 years to make an album, because there is some art that's taken a long time to make and is very good. But I also think with music, sometimes you're trying to capture lightning in a bottle. I'm sure you've worked on creative projects where you have spent too much time on it, tweaked it one too many times, and the whole thing just turns into a dumpster fire because it wasn't allowed to just be whatever it was and not be changed. And I kind of wonder if maybe that's what happened. You know, if he was like, well, these are good songs, so let's do this. And then there was an iteration of the album that worked, and he went, ah, I'm insecure about this. Why don't we, oh, I know, an 80s gag. That would be funny, wouldn't it? And then it just turns into what it is.
I was reading reviews for this album, and I almost just wanted to read the entire Pitchfork review for it, because it kind of mirrored my thoughts entirely.
Yeah, same.
And it was fair. I mean, we'll talk about it here in a little bit. It was fair and metered, But I thought it was interesting that, you know, they pointed out, I believe it was in that review, that, you know, it's got to be pretty good to be John Mayer. I mean, you're playing as the side guitarist for one of the greatest rock bands of all time on tour, and you can kind of do whatever you want. And so part of me feels like this project isn't a project of he spent too much time tinkering with it, and more a project of I wrote another song for this 80s project that I'm playing around with, and that's done.
So you think the problem was there was not he was that just, much.
He was just playing with it whenever he felt like it, and then when he had 10 tracks, that was it, is what I... That's the feeling I get, because that's the other thing about this album. The only thing cohesive about it is all the 80s textures and themes. The songs and the lyrics all kind of have a very similar direction. I mean, it's called Sob Rock for a reason. I mean, lyrically, this album is all basically about a bunch of 14-year-old boys who got dumped or put in the friend zone. And so with that kind of in mind, I feel like it was a project that he didn't necessarily take seriously, more so than he spent so much time invested in tweaking it to the, you know, building a camel, essentially, making a committee-based decision.
I think if you're an artist in Paris, you're like inspired by everything around you, but when you're in Pawnee, you're only inspired to buy a bus ticket and get the hell out of here.
I think your assessment is spot on. It's so hard, and this is probably part of the nature of the beast, is that to me, probably the reason I have impressions of it being something that was done to death, it's just because John Mayer's a pro. So the production quality is good, but flawed. It's not bad. None of the sounds are bad. They're bland because they're so, you know, him and his production crew or whatever you want to call it, they know what they're doing. And so it's almost the opposite problem, where they have too much money and time to throw at recording an album, or too much technology. To where it just becomes this thing that is just like so bland. But I think we've given a pretty solid explanation of our feelings on it. Do you want to go ahead and move on to reviews? Is there anything else you want to mention before we do that?
I just want to mention the fact that you glossed over his touring schedule for 2022, because I caught you in a lie in our show notes.
My information was from the Pitchfork review, which was probably mistake number one, but they said something about him not even bothering with a tour for it and just touring with the Grateful Dead, which I thought was like would have been a good like condemnation of the album, but evidently I was incorrect. So,
well, I think that was the Pitchfork review writer wishing for something, like maybe he should just like...
I misread it. He was like wishing like, oh, please just go with the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't even tour this album.
No, but he's not doing a world tour or anything. He's touring the United States with it from February to April of 2022 with like 52 dates.
It's
gonna
like...
be a huge tour. As far as, well, I say that it's only like 15 locations. He's doing like 3 nights in each location. He'll be in Austin for 2 nights and Houston for 3 nights, and I may go see it just to say I've been to see a John Mayer.
Going to be in Austin. When is this?
In March of next year.
I have got to pony up the cash. You know what,
you can stay with me, I'll drive you.
I would love that. We'll see what happens, because Megan and I, here's an unrelated to John Mayer but a music note, Megan and I are going to get to go see Dr. Dog play in Austin in November, I believe.
That's awesome.
Yes. And we're going to go see Manchester Orchestra in like March or April of next year.
That is cool.
In Austin. So there will be a lot of music in my future, which I'm super excited for.
I think we should have you record voice notes in your car on your way home from the concert.
Can I?
As
can
like
I
a on the scene, voice notes on the scene
at the show?
Yeah, sure.
Me just shouting into my phone behind some poor concert goer.
As long as there's no background music for us to get sued over, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, that will be impossible. When Megan and I, so we've seen Dr. Dog before in Lawrence, Kansas, and they were loud.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just for the sake of the listener, just real quick, super briefly. They kind of describe their music as the three B's: Bob Dylan, the Beatles, and the Beach Boys, because they have elements that are remarkably similar to all those.
The fourth B is lots of bass.
They are deafening. Like when we left that concert, Megan was genuinely worried because she hadn't been to a concert in a few years. And she kept asking me, like, my ears are ringing. What's wrong? And I was like, no, it's fine.
Carl is the head of all outdoor security. Why was he transferred from his indoor desk job, you ask? Listen.
Hey, Leslie, have you seen Avatar? I never saw Avatar. I wanted to read the book first, but then I realized there's no book version of Avatar.
Because, you know, and I heard a line, we'd be practicing in this stuffy, unair-conditioned room, just as loud as can be. So I was used to it, but Megan was a little worried that she had incurred some serious hearing damage. But anyway, that has nothing to do with John Mayer. And I hope it would be wonderful if I could buy some tickets and go. So that sounds amazing.
All right, Chris. So critical reception for this album. We finally got an album with a Metacritic review. Now, it's only based on 8 reviews at the moment, but the heavy hitters are all there: Rolling Stone, Variety, New York Times, Los Angeles Times, all the big ones. They gave this album a 69 out of 100.
Nice.
Which by Reddit, Reddit.
No. Oh, don't go to Reddit. That's the black hole of the internet where everyone goes to die.
It's where I spend all my time on social media anymore. We should start a subreddit just to see if we can drum up some business.
The 2DNT dumpster fire of the subreddit.
The comments are unchained.
Oh, man.
So on Metacritic, 69 out of 100 is considered generally favorable.
Yeah.
And overall, that equates to a C-plus album in other scoring standards. I thought it was interesting. This is an aside, we're not going to read either of these reviews, but the New York Times and Los Angeles Times, one gave it a 40% review and the other gave an 80% review. Mm. So almost like a bi-coastal bias.
Yeah.
And the reviewer for the New York Times hated the album for the reasons the reviewer from the Los Angeles Times loved it. They were like mirrored really reviews.
Well, the people on the West Coast like have all the folks in their yachts who love that stuff to begin with.
There's
like,
a lot of old money in yachts.
For Yacht Rock. Yeah.
There's a lot of old money in yachts on the East Coast. You ever heard of Martha's Vineyard?
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. But I was just thinking, you know, at least I do anyway, when I hear Yacht Rock and like 80s pop and stuff like that, I kind of think of like 80s Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah. No.
Like everything's real chintzy and
I've got
neon
a thing.
Colors.
When I think of 80s music, I think of Miami Vice, which
that's
Don Johnson in a lot of cocaine.
Lots, anything in the 80s is just like
there was a dust. There was a dust outside. Yeah, there was a film on everything.
As somebody who lives in a really dusty area, I can just picture like just a fine film of dust on every Camaro and Lamborghini parked outside the club.
Hey, we made it almost all the way through this podcast without talking about mirrored closet doors or mirrored rooms. I mean, come on.
I know. The back half of it got to squeeze some of those references in at some point. I think after this, I'm going to have to go play Vice City just to get the like 80s out of my system.
Is there a good remaster of Vice City? Because I still have it on PS2 or whatever the console was.
So Megan and I downloaded it from the PlayStation Store for like $5 on our PS4. But it's not remastered. Mm-hmm. It looks just as good / bad as it did when it came out. But it plays the same. Like, it's still fun. It just doesn't look any better. I wish they would remaster that one. If they gave that, like, GTA 6, is it 5 or 6
five.
That's out now?
Yeah,
if they gave it GTA 5 level graphics, oh, man, that would be a fun game.
That is by far and away, still to this day, the best of the Grand Theft Auto franchise as far as storyline goes. I love that storyline. But that's not a review for Sob Rock.
That is neither here nor there.
Which, in all fairness, this album would not have made any of the radio stations in Sob Rock or in GTA Vice City.
Wait, the competition is so stiff. Like, that soundtrack is one of the best video game soundtracks. But let's try and get back here. It's tough because I think the problem with this album is it's just not as good as the original stuff. But Chris Willman, writing for Variety, starts his article with this. He says, John Mayer winks through his tears in this high concept pastiche, finding the soft rock spot between early MTV era parody and pure earnestness. And the word rock, by the way, is in a parenthetical statement. There's a little minus sign in front of it. So it does not rock enough for Chris Willman to even seriously apply the moniker rock to it.
Well, and his review really shocked me in how he was looking for this album to be like funny, like it's a parody. And his ultimate pain was that it was not a parody, that it was just a lame attempt.
That is the thing. If you're going to call it, like, the thing about a shit post, you're going to have to censor so much. There's going to be a lot of beep. The thing about, like, a bad meme is that it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, it's dumb. Maybe the humor is, like, really low-hanging fruit, but it's supposed to be funny. And so if you're going to tell people, oh, haha, look at this, like, super tongue-in-cheek nod to 80s music, like, it should be funny.
Yeah.
But instead, what we got was, like, weird, retooled John Mayer songs to just sound like something playing from a boombox in Miami. Like, it just didn't... We should get into reviews, because I'm already just starting to... to start my like fist shaking review at this album.
I do want to mention the Pitchfork 6.1 review from Chris Sam Sadomski, mm-hmm. who quotes John Mayer's comment about pretend someone made a record in 1988 and shelved it. He explained, he being John Mayer, and it was just found this year. It's an intriguing concept until you realize that even in his fantasies, John Mayer is making music doomed to be lost to time, sapped of inspiration and out of his element.
I mean, by that metric, he kind of succeeded because it is as forgettable as an album written in the 80s and then shelved.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he succeeded in the way he thought he did.
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. So with that said, we've let the professionals say something. I think we should talk about how we felt about this album.
Let's do it.
All right, Chris, and I'm going to let you go first tonight since this was kind of your idea to go. But before we do, I'll remind our audience that we use a 1-6 guitar string model. Mainly, we adopted that model because we really love guitar players as, you know, the leaders of bands most of the time. So it's a very fitting tribute for John Mayer. And Chris, 1-6 strings, one being the, I don't know, the worst album ever made and should have stayed on the shelf and not released after 1988. Like, it should have been lost in the RCA fire a couple of years ago.
Oh no.
Or to 6, you know, belongs in the Hall of Fame. Give me a review.
So I really, really wanted to like this album and I wound up liking half of it. And honestly, like, I think there's a really excellent novelty EP mixed in with a bunch of lackluster chaff. The parts of this album that worked for me were not the guitar solos or the riffs, but the 80s elements and textures that Mayer really got right. I really love the Toto-like synth chords at the beginning of Last Train Home. I love the tight groove and the background oohs and ahs of New Light. And even the like kind of cheesy Clapton goes solo mellowness of Wild Blue. I thought all that stuff was effective and enjoyable. But the rest of the album was such a bland experience. It's hard for me to to imagine that John Mayer tried really hard. You know, and he's such a talented musician. It's hard for me to feel good saying that because there's some baseline of effort that went into it. But I think maybe John Mayer fell victim to the irony addiction that plagues a lot of art these days. Everything has to be, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Everything has to be, oh, look at how meta I'm being. So I don't know. I enjoyed half of it, but the other half really left me wanting. That being said, the only aggressively bad track, like truly dismal track for me, was Why You Know Love Me. But we've kind of hinted at the fact that we liked the music of that song. It's the lyrics that we didn't really enjoy. I don't know. At the end of the day, Pretty Good is about as generous I can be for this album. At its best, Sob Rock is merely okay, which is a shame because the 80s produced a lot of really inventive and exciting music. If this album was supposed to be funny, I just only kind of chuckled. I didn't do much more than that. So I have to give it 3 out of 6 strings. 50% batting average, which is about my experience with the album. What about you? How did you feel about it?
You know, I've struggled to give this album a fair review the last couple of weeks we've been listening to it. Early on, we talked about how it was hit or miss. The phrase close enough for government work comes to mind when I listen to this album.
Oh, man, I'm so glad you said that. I'm sorry to interrupt your review, but I'd love that.
In the end, Sob Rock left me sobbing all right, just not for the right reasons. The hits are good, but the misses are bad in my estimation. And I think it's because of the sort of pedestal that I've put John Mayer on over the last 20 years. Like you mentioned earlier, we tend to absorb so much of the media we consume in our early teen years, and John Mayer was definitely at the top of the list when I was 14 to 18 years old. I believe him to be one of the greatest musicians of all time, and seeing an album like this come from him that fails to meet my expectations of him as a writer and as a musician really was a bummer. I felt like the whole I'm a loner, loveless loser stick, perhaps better described as the perennial friend zone guy, was a lame direction to take overall for this album. The 80s weren't really about that, at least when people think about it. It was about exploration and, you know, exciting adventures and things along those lines. And John Mayer literally made a career selling sex. So why would he revert back to this character more than just being John Mayer and making an 80s album that it would have, John Mayer would have been great in the 80s with 80s yeah. style. He's notorious for his string of very messy public relationships and breakups, and half the modern pop breakup songs seem to be written about him in some way, shape, or form. So fashioning yourself in this manner just seems really disingenuous to who you are as a musician over your entire career. If you take it all in and comb through his interviews, it seems like he's trying to attempt some kind of George Lucas-esque prequel to the Star Wars kind of thing, where I had this really big hit on my hands with the career that I've made so far. Now I need to go write a prequel that feeds into it to make money off of. And so I'll just write a prequel and hopefully you sad sacks will go out and buy it and get over it so I can fund my hobbies. If that's the case, I really hate this album with the rage of every Star Wars fan when they find out at Comic-Con will feature Jar Jar Binks retrospectives and costume contests and all of that, because it's just not good in general. There's a lot of things that I do like about the album. There's things that make it fun, and there are tracks that I enjoy on this album. But I don't enjoy them because they're an 80s song, and I don't enjoy them because they're John Mayer music. They're just cool songs by themselves, and remove all that, and okay, this is good. When I think about this album, I think about how great it could have been. This is great, except this is missing just this one little bit. And if he'd given just this little bit more effort, or as we talked about earlier, dialed back on the effort a little bit, like don't focus so much, whatever spectrum he was on, either the not focused enough or too focused, meet in the middle somewhere and come somewhere with it. I found myself wishing that this album was just a little bit more 80s, a little bit more John Mayer, a little bit more of everything. You know, they say your heroes die young, or they live long enough to become the villain they swore to stave off. And this album is good, but it's not good enough. I'm giving it 3 out of 6 strings. I'll go over here and sob in my beer.
Man, I am right there with you. This was definitely, you know, we wanted the Clone Wars and we got Trade Federation BS. That's like, that's, I think, what happened. And I don't mean the Clone Wars, the movie. I mean, when you watch the original Star Wars and Obi-Wan says, we fought together in the Clone Wars, you go like, oh, holy crap, that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get episode 2, the Clone Wars, and you're like, what is this? What is going on right now? That comparison blew my mind. I am a huge fan of the Saab Rock is the prequels.
It really
interpretation
is.
Of this. You need to start writing your music appreciation paper now. It's your thesis.
Well, let's move on to favorite and least favorite track. Chris, what was your favorite track on this album?
So I really enjoyed the track Till the Right One Comes. It was the one that I kept returning to. Like when I was working on the show document during my break times at work and stuff, I would just put that song on because mm-hmm. that song was like the best vibes of the album. It reminded me a little bit of Paul Simon's album Graceland. I don't know if you've heard anything off that album mm-hmm. or not, but yeah. just kind of the like shuffling groove. And it's got the best guitar playing in the album, I think. Like the solo doesn't feel super out of place like some of them did, for me personally anyway. And it was also the only lovesick kind of tune that worked for me. Mm-hmm. I kind of liked his like... because he's acknowledging in that song, like, look, I've had a lot of bad relationships, but boy, when I get the right one, I'm sure going to prove you guys wrong that I'm not some, you know, mm-hmm. licentious rock star. So I enjoyed that one a lot. For me, it was the pod racing sequence of the album, to piggyback on your episode 1 comparison. Or if you didn't like the pod racing sequence, it's the like duel of the fates at the end of the film, whichever.
The duel of the fates for sure. That's yeah. the one shining moment in that movie.
Yeah. Oh, see, I like the pod racing sequence. That was the only thing I ever watched from those movies. Is probably. That I'll just put that on.
You sound like somebody who collected pogs from Taco Bell for this movie. How's that for a 90s reference? Ha!
Man. Okay, so I did not, but everything else about episode 1 I could get my hands on, I collected. So it was about the only thing I didn't get. But what about you? What was your duel of the fates for this this album?
So 2 of the tracks really stood out for me. Wild Blue and Shot in the Dark. Though I do think Mayer is probably right to be using The Last Train as kind of the publicity song for this. I mean, he's been on Conan yeah. and Late Night and done all the different, you know, shows that you can do. And Last Train has been the song that he features on that. And that's probably mm-hmm. the most accessible song on this album, I think, as far yeah. as just not ticking off anybody in the audience.
I agree.
When it comes to picking between Wild Blue and Shot in the Dark, I really like kind of the Eagles Ford tune that is Wild Blue. There's a lot mm-hmm. of just fun guitar stuff. And he even kind of imitates Glenn Frey's voice a little bit yeah. in that song, which yeah. I have a soft spot for Glenn Frey. So I really liked mm-hmm. it. In the end, though, it came down to I really like the wordplay in Shot in the Dark. Like, yeah. I think Shot in the Dark has the most creative lyrics on this whole album. there's one line that I have repeated to myself out of context like 1,000 times in the last 2 weeks, and is the gate code still your birthday?
Yeah,
like super that's creepy. So good, but it's so it's good.
Yeah, like, it's good. It's a great lyric, but it's also like, ooh, creeper.
So that was my favorite song, and just because it's got a hook, it's got something that drew me back to it. The music on that song is phenomenal, and felt kind of like a hybrid between whatever the theme music was for Lethal Weapon 1 and Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I love those two movies, so this was the one for me.
I mean, he hit the 80s mark, because you just mentioned two very 80s things. Oh,
two of the greatest 80s movies ever made. So,
so I think for for least favorite track, we probably don't even have to bring it up.
We've but both I'll trash let you talked
take it. The lead, because we both trashed the same song.
For me, Chris, and you agree, the worst song on this album is Why You Know Love Me. This song is absolute garbage, both musically, and my voice broke. That's how angry I am about it right now.
Just choked with rage.
No, it's a trash song, and it reminds me of the scene from The Office when Kevin is trying to use fewer and fewer words.
So me think, why waste time, say lot word when few word do trick?
Like, that's what this song feels like, and it's stupid.
Oh man, it is. It's the thing that I have in the show notes here is that it sounds like someone's dad trying to use hip slang. It, like, he's using lolcats lingo or something, which I even sound like an idiot saying that, because it's not good.
I'm the cool dad. That's my thing. I'm hip. I surf the web. I text. LOL. Laugh out loud. OMG. Oh my God. WTF. Why the face? You know, I know all the dances to High School Musical. So
and the only thing I like about it is that in a different alternate universe somewhere where he writes the same song, but gives it less of an 80s feel and maybe changes the words of the chorus, it sounds like a really good George Harrison tune.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it reminds me of something that would have been on This Too Shall Pass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got like a fairly complex chord progression that goes somewhere, but the lyrics to the chorus are just mind-numbingly stupid. And even the production quality is like the worst possible version of what that song could be.
Yeah, so
that song is Why We Know Love You, John. That is why.
That's too far, sir. You've crossed a line. I still love him. I'm disappointed.
Oh, yeah.
We're not angry. We're just not disappointed. That's your you're episode getting, title.
Yeah,
we're not angry. Getting, we're just you're disappointed.
Your practice in for being a dad, too. So whenever Maverick takes you off, I'm not mad. That was always the worst to hear that from parents, wasn't it?
But for me to wrap up the thing about Why You Know Love Me, I've given a lot of trash to other songs that just have repetitive lyrics over and over again. The phrase Why You Know Love Me is said 37 times in this song.
Oh, you counted. Ooh.
Yeah, it's brutal. And then the rest of the phrases in the song are also repeated a bunch, but I didn't bother to count them. So
this is
a 3-sentence long song that's just repeated over and over and over again.
Oh, and it's awful.
The mental musings of a deranged 13-year-old. So I got nothing for it.
Oh, man. Well, I think we've suffered long enough. It's time for us to come crawling back to the Oracle and beg her to
we're not take worthy. Us
back into the warm embrace of the kitchen and cookies and bending spoons. So let's see what we are going to listen to next week. It's from your list, right? Because yeah. I was the one who was like, oh, let's do this. Great idea that was.
Actually, so I did not count this as our episode from your list. I counted it as a Woodcrest list. But the prior episode before that we did together was On Dark Horses from your list. So it's still my pick.
That's what I was thinking was like, it's your turn.
Yeah. So on my list right now, we've got 28 options for the Oracle to spit out. We're going to
hit. They're whittling down.
Here we go. Oh, boy. We're going to do another fairly recent album, Ed Sheeran's Divide 2017.
So, I have not listened to any Ed Sheeran that isn't on the radio. I've never listened to a full album of Ed Sheeran. So
you are in for a treat, I think. I hope.
Well, let's see. Ed Sheeran is somebody who's like, I think John Mayer is kind of viewed as his competition as far as like sensitive singer-songwriter guy.
And a phenomenal guitarist as well.
Oh, well, I am excited. Well, listen, folks, thank you so much for listening. If you have been enjoying our show, please rate it and review it on whatever podcast catcher device app thing of your choice. We might read your reviews or comments on air, good or bad. If you have really mean, nasty things to say about us, like we did about John Mayer's new album, we will read them because we want attention, good or bad.
Yes, if you want to get in touch with us, shoot us an email at twodudesandtunes@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram or Facebook and tell us what you thought about John Mayer's Sob Rock. Were you as sad as we were? Also, don't forget to tune in next Wednesday when Chris and I listen to Ed Sheeran's Divide album. He's the third most listened to artist on Spotify. Thank you for joining us this week, everybody. We'll see you next week on Two Dudes and Tunes.